This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. Welcome to a snowy edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The richest man in the world had his phone hacked, and if that can happen to him, could it happen to you? We'll talk about that in our next segment. But right now, jobless claims still low, while the latest report on leading indicators is out. We're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton in Chicago. Diane, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about that report of leading economic indicators. There are some causes for concern, and what are they?
Well, what we're seeing out there is sort of this dissonance between what's going on between the manufacturing sector and the rest of the economy. The manufacturing sector has been in a recession. We found that out by data released last week by the Federal Reserve, that it was in a recession in 2019. It took the brunt of the blow from tariffs, and the Fed was able to offset that a bit with rate cuts and a resurgence in growth in the housing market. But what we're seeing is sort of this dissonance between how CEOs feel about the world, how consumers feel about the world, and until very recently, how the financial markets are reacting.
And then when it comes to jobless claims, when you have these indicators that point to signs of or reasons to be pessimistic about the economy and that maybe this decade-long period of growth may be slowing down and reversing, the jobless claims come out and they're still at their lowest figure since 1969 or 1970. What is driving that? Is it simply a matter of hiring? The job market is that good, or people can get enough jobs in the gig economy to avoid filing for unemployment?
Well, certainly all of the above. I think that's what's really important, is that we see a lot of different ways for people to be employed now than they once could. And more importantly, you know, we are at a low unemployment rate. The problem is we still have a lot of people, a lot of people on the sidelines that are not participating. Even though this economy is at a 3.5% 50-year low on unemployment, participation, particularly by men, is nowhere near what it was 50 years ago. It's also nowhere near what it was in the late 1990s boom, when unemployment was over 0.5% higher than it is today. So we're coming back. That's the good news. We're pulling people in from the sidelines. That's better news. But there still is some underlying stress in this economy. And as good as the stock market has been, the stock market is less reflective of the economy today than it was 50 years ago. In fact, in the 1970s, the 100 largest firms in the U.S. economy accounted for 50% of profits in the U.S. In the 2010s, only 30 firms accounted for half of all profits in the U.S. And most recently, we've seen four major companies really dominate movements in the broader stock indices and the market cap, and that's all major tech companies.
One question that is going to be litigated to death between now and November is the Trump economy. How much credit does the current administration deserve for keeping things going versus whether or not he inherited these trends from the Obama administration? And what do the numbers say?
Well, at the end of the day, we've seen a slowdown in employment growth, but lower unemployment. So the slowdown in unemployment is not as bad as long as the unemployment rate is still falling. So there's going to be a lot of people sort of splitting hairs with these numbers. As long as the economy is still going, we've got an expansion that has spanned two presidencies, and that's the most important thing. And no one policy, I think the biggest heavy lifting here has come from the Federal Reserve over the last year. They retreated three quarter point moves after raising rates 4 points, a full percent in 2018. That retreat by the Fed and U-turn by the Fed really gets the credit, but nobody really cares about the Fed unless they want to blame the economy for going down.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Diane Swonk, chief economist, Grant Thornton, based in Chicago. Coming up, a high-profile phone hack is a good reminder to remain cyber secure.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The United Nations has revealed that the phone of Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos was hacked in the U.S. and the U.K. Let's see what can be learned from this situation. We welcome in Adam Levin, the founder of Cyber Scout and the author of the book Swiped, based in New York. Adam, welcome back to the program. I guess the bottom line is, Adam, if you or I or just anyone is texting on WhatsApp with Prince Mohammed bin Salman, don't open any links from him.
Hi, Rob. Yeah, I think that's pretty true, and I know that he's contacting you almost on a daily basis. So
yeah, all the time. We go way back.
This is sort of a version of what we call smishing, which is text-based phishing. And if you click on the wrong link, and a lot of times it looks like it's coming from someone you know, it may even be coming from someone you know, and that someone you know may be doing things more nefarious than you think they are. You do run the risk that whatever you click in your mobile device could end up putting some kind of malware on the device, which could then start feeding photographs or sensitive personal information out of your phone to the particular person who hacked you.
Well, the most common phishing scam, and there's one going around today from FedEx, where you get a link that appears to be from a legitimate source, or maybe it's on Facebook. You have a friend who says, hey, I found this picture of you. Click on it to stop it. And then you end up getting, installing malware on your device. If someone like the one of the world's richest men could be fooled by an ostensible friend, or at least someone who travels in the similar circles of power, can the same thing happen to us with as much frequency?
Well, think about the fact that we're really all targets now, and especially in light of the ruckus with Iran, there's always the risk of increased hacking and increased phishing. There's what I call the pantheon of phishings. There's phishing, which is generic, dear cardholder, dear member, dear friend. There's spear phishing, where it'd be dear Rob. There's vishing, like when you get a phone call from someone you think you know, but it's not, and they ask you to provide information, and you think it's okay because they're an authority. And then there's smishing, which is where you click on a link, and it may turn out to be that that's malware-laden, or it takes you to a site that looks very authentic, where they ask you to re-authenticate yourself just to thaw your account that's been frozen, and you get yourself in trouble. And the important thing for people to remember is we look in the mirror and see us. But to a hacker, we're Kim Kardashian, because we've got data, we've got information, or we could be affiliated with a company or someone else in our family who they're really going after, and we become the conduit for that attack.
So bottom line, should you as an internet user just simply don't trust links from anyone, even if it is from a trusted, relative or friend?
I always say confirm the sender independently. Make sure it's who you think it is. And even then you run the risk they've been breached and they're sending you something with malware. But it's all about cyber hygiene, long and strong passwords, two-factor authentication, not clicking on links that you're not sure about, securing your mobile device, updating your device whenever it's appropriate to do it. And oftentimes they update automatically. Don't flick aside update notices as if they're just bothersome mosquitoes. And also lock your device and use six digits, not four, and make sure the digits you're using aren't the numbers of your phone number.
Which was a joke in Spaceballs 30 years ago, but apparently it is people do that. Adam Levin, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, the founder of Cyber Scout and author of the book Swiped, based in New York. Coming up next, gauging the impact of the deadly virus that's spreading from China.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The World Health Organization is holding an emergency meeting as it decides whether how to designate the new coronavirus as a global health emergency. Let's discuss the impact in China, where it originated, and across the globe with Michelle Cortez, medical science and tech reporter with Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis. Michelle, welcome to the program. Before we talk about the impact of the coronavirus, what is it? How does it affect people, and how is it spread?
Well, so it is a novel virus that is coming out of, everyone believes it is coming out of a live animal market in Wuhan, China. The market has since been shut down. But what they believe is that it was a virus that leapt from animals, most likely snakes or bats, into humans in that actual live animal market. And then since then, what's happened is it has been passed from human to human, which makes it much more dangerous because it can spread that way. It's a coronavirus, which is named corona because it's shaped like a crown when you look at it under a microscope. But normally these viruses are pretty mild. They've been thought of as just like a cold virus, except for we've seen with SARS and MERS and a couple of other infections that they can actually turn deadly. And that's the fear.
Now, there have been about 650 cases reported around the world of this coronavirus. And to put this in perspective, tens of thousands of people die of flu in the U.S. So while this is a disease that does grab headlines, as far as a global health threat, it hasn't really reached that threshold as of yet.
Right. Well, the fear, again, is that this is something that is completely novel, and so no one has protection against it theoretically, right? Whereas with influenza, we've seen it, you know, it comes around seasonally. Some people have certain protections against different types of it. With this particular case, we are absolutely seeing that at the moment, it doesn't look anywhere near as serious, even as, you know, SARS or MERS, which killed significantly fewer people than the flu does every year. The concern is that if it adjusts further, if the virus mutates further, it could start hitting people who are completely vulnerable to it and do much greater damage.
And the reason
why
it's weighing down on the financial markets, at least, is that there are some concerns that this might be a rerun of SARS 15 years ago.
Right. Well, that would be a terrible thing if it was a rerun of SARS. But the thing is that it's already affecting commerce. It's already affecting economies. So that's the thing. It's this theoretical risk. So everybody gets really worried about it and involved. So we're starting to see, for example, they've shut down all incoming and outgoing transport through Wuhan and five different cities around that area. That means commerce has stopped. That's larger than New York City, larger than Chicago. So there are absolutely already economic impacts. We don't do that for influenza. So, you know, whether or not it's going to do the same kind of health damage, we don't know. But the financial damage is already starting to hit.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Michelle Cortez, medical science and tech reporter at Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Coming up in Technology Thursday, the use of augmented reality in medical training. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Xerox is launching a hostile takeover bid for HP. Augmented reality is seeing increased use in the medical field. We'll learn more in Technology Thursday. Mayor Lightfoot calling on leaders of major U.S. cities to work together to fight street violence, and the presidential impeachment trial ramping back up in Washington. A special report coming up from CBS News. WBBM Business, the markets are down. The Dow is down 106 points. The NASDAQ is down 8. The S&P 500 down 8. We have 32 degrees in Chicago with light snow, a south wind at 9, a wind chill of 24, going up to 35 today. The light snow will mix with some rain, accumulations of up to an inch. WBBM News Time, 12:31.
CBS News Special Report.
The Senate will convene as a court of impeachment.
Day two of impeachment opening arguments is now underway in the Senate. Jerry Nadler kicking things off for the House managers.
The articles are overwhelmingly supported by the evidence amassed by the House. Notwithstanding the president's complete stonewalling, his attempt to block all witnesses and all documents from the United States Congress.
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer says GOP senators are in the chamber, eyes wide shut.
The same Republicans saying they heard nothing new just voted 9 times on Tuesday to hear nothing new.
Republican Lindsey Graham says the president's legal team will have a chance to unravel the quilt woven by the prosecutors.
What I will tell my colleagues is the other side gets to talk and see if they can pull a thread here and pull a thread there and see if it holds up.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Pam Coulter.
WBBM News Time, 12:32. Stocks are lower today. We are joined by Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. Jim, welcome back to the program. As far as the markets being in the red today, it's much more than the fears over the coronavirus in China.
No, I think that's exactly what it's about. You know, the market's up a lot. It's extended. It's had a melt up, so it's vulnerable on a short term basis to any sort of bad news. And it's purely the coronavirus. And the fear is If this thing spreads, it could affect economic activity in China, particularly at an important time because it's their New Year and it's a time when people celebrate and see families, and that you have a large degree of travel between China and other Asian countries, and could it spread and pull down economic activity worldwide, but particularly in Asia. My experience is that usually it pays not to invest based on these black swans and to assume that the world's going to get back to normal. And so there's always a chance that this spirals out of control on the downside, but my experience is that it will pass and we'll get back to the fundamentals.
Before we talk about the banks, let's talk about Comcast, because it did report better than expected quarterly figures, and yet the stock is down almost 3%. So what's the disconnect there?
Yeah, on the conference call, they spoke negatively about the outlook for the television and cable business, which of course historically dominated the company. And now everything's moving towards streaming, and you're making a transition from cable to streaming. And they implied that the cable and TV side, the outlook for the next year is going to be worse than most analysts had expected. And so that's why the stock is down. But this company is executing exceedingly well.
Is this a situation, though, especially as media companies are evaluated on their ability to make the transition from over-the-air or cable box to a streaming model? This seems like a situation where the companies that have the most robust intellectual property and the most popular intellectual property, they're the ones that Wall Street will love, like, immediately off the rip. For example, Disney Plus.
Yeah, you need content and distribution. Distribution without content puts you at an advantage, and content without distribution puts you at a disadvantage. So you're absolutely right. People are going to want companies that have both of them. But content is king, because if you have content, you'll get distribution.
So if Comcast really wanted to get some love from Wall Street, they better hope that Peacock exceeds expectations.
Yeah, they've got a lot based on it, and it's early. I think there's room for three or four or five major players, and Peacock will be one of them, and I think Disney will be one of them. So it's a work in progress, but I think in both cases you have exceedingly well-run companies that ought to be on the winning side of the equation over time.
And then very quickly, banks are a little bit lower today. What's happening at Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase?
Well, rates coming down, net interest income is proving to be a little bit disappointing. But again, the banks have had a good run, and I would expect this to be transitory also. But as rates come down, it affects the profitability of banks, and so you're getting a little bit of a correction on the run that they've had. And, you know, the 10-year Treasury is down to 172, down from 180, and that's pulling down the whole interest rate structure. So that's negatively impacting financial stocks. But again, I expect that to be transitory.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director at Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. And coming up in Technology Thursday, using augmented reality to improve patient care.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and this afternoon we're putting a spotlight on the use of augmented reality in medical training. We welcome in John Martin, co-founder and CEO of Bund IAR in Chicago. John, welcome back to the program. Let's talk about the use of augmented reality when it comes to medical training. Are we talking about putting on the virtual reality helmet and practicing surgery before you actually utilize those skills in a real person?
Well, actually, Rob, ours is more focused on the patients and on medical device companies and hospitals. It might be helpful to the listeners to know about 2 years ago, Google and Apple both declared that the mobile device was going to be the distribution platform for augmented reality. And the reason that was so important was 99% of the world has a Google phone or an Apple phone, and most of our society is somewhat addicted to the phones. So all of a sudden, augmented reality was very available to everybody. I ran into my neighbor down at the beach, Dr. Elzadi, who said, "Oh my gosh, the entire medical ecosystem needs this augmented reality." He says, it would be so nice if my patients actually listened to what I told them to do. I tell them what to do for pre-op, what to do for op, what to do for the post-op and physical therapy and medical and medicines and things. He says they don't listen to anything. It would be so nice if they could just point their phone at a simple piece of brochure of mine, and next thing you know, they have a roadmap on everything with curated, accurate descriptions of what's going to go on, videos, 3D, all by pointing your phone at one piece of paper. So it really is a tool that can help everybody. In the case of medical, it's going to help the training of medical device companies like Medtronic. They sell into hospitals and nurses and doctors. It's how hospitals will train their nurses and staff and clinicians. And certainly from Dr. Elzadi's point of view, it's how patients will have better outcomes and how they can share what's going on with their surgery, with their sons and daughters who might live in Greenwich and Santa Monica.
Now, is this going to be a situation where 10 years from now or 15 years or maybe even sooner where you have there may not even be a doctor in the doctor's office where you'll just have the physician's assistant using the augmented reality device to conduct checkups or give basic diagnoses?
Well, I don't see that people won't be going to see their doctor, but I think you're right on in regards to how things can be done more remotely with technology for certain. We are such a connected society now, and with the power of these mobile devices, as we all know, with their cameras and other things and other tools, it's amazing what you could do remotely. But no, I always think that there's going to be doctor's visits, and certainly as it relates to things like surgeries and those type of serious procedures, you'll be doing it with a doctor. That doesn't mean they won't be using more advanced tools. I think we can certainly count on that.
Yeah, what would the doctor's office of the future look like in a world of augmented reality? You know, now you go in, the nurse takes all your vitals, then the doctor comes in and performs a variety of tests and talks you through whatever maladies you may have. How is that going to change?
Well, I think at the early stage right now, and that's why we're trying to come up with very usable tools. What's going to happen is correct information will be shared with people. As Dr. Elzadi said, when people go home and they do a Google search, no offense to search engines, but they get all sorts of ads and misinformation. And what was going to happen is we're going to use AR to give curated, accurate information about that patient's exact situation. And we're going to be able to do it in such a way where they can share it with family members and others that are concerned about their health and well-being. And it's going to be where they're going to know what to do as far as their meds. They're not going to come into the surgery having eaten that morning. They're going to be able to know what to do for physical therapy with step-by-step curated content that's accurate with easy access to it, on-demand information, on-demand training, on-demand learning.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention the frustration that most of us have when it comes to a doctor search engine, where you may have a paper cut, and then after a couple of minutes online, you've convinced yourself to say your final goodbyes to all of your family and friends because whatever you got, it's terminal.
Exactly. But I also think, Rob, the biggest area you're going to be seeing in the very near future that's going to impact virtually all your listeners is training. We think augmented reality is such just a wonderful tool for on-demand training, on-demand learning. And you're going to see a big flow with AR solutions to training. Because let's be honest, our millennials and Gen Zs, there's a term out there, it's called PowerPoint by death. And they don't like PowerPoint. They want something immersive. They want something engaging. They want something on their mobile device because they're used to doing everything on it. So you're going to see training tools on mobile devices for certain.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon, John Martin, talking about the world of augmented reality. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, Xerox sets its sights on HP.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Xerox making a move to take over HP, and it's not a friendly gesture. Let's get the latest now from Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. Gary, welcome back to the program, and why this sudden outbreak of aggression from Rochester, New York?
I wouldn't call them a failing company, but when you're a company where your sales are down, 8 to 10% year over year, and your stock hasn't budged in 20 years, and if you go back 25 years, your stock is way down from the highs, you try to do different things. But I have to tell you, if I'm Hewlett Packard, I'm telling them to take a flying leap because it really does nothing for Hewlett Packard. They have to raise cash to do the deal, and I don't think Xerox comes with any proprietary business or acumen that will change the playing field for Hewlett Packard.
And you mentioned that Xerox is not really in a position to mount a hostile takeover, not only just from their own status, but also from a size perspective. HP is a substantially larger company.
It is the proverbial fly trying to swallow the elephant. The only thing I can tell you is it looks like Xerox has raised $24 billion from Bank of America and a company called Mizuho Financial. They also have a little bit of backing from activist Carl Icahn on the deal. Of course, there's reasons for him wanting it. But again, for me, Hewlett Packard makes no sense. But what they're going to try and do now is, since they Xerox bought a piece of the stock, they're trying to put some of their own people on the board. They're going to nominate 11 directors to the board. Whether or not it gets done or not is another story.
Very quickly, if this ends unsuccessfully for Xerox, and it sounds like it will, what happens there?
Xerox is going to have to come up with some new applications, do something different, because just the last four quarters, sales down 8%, sales down 9%, sales down 9%, sales down 6%. So I think that speaks for itself. The stock is sitting at $36 right now. I can go back to the year 2000. It was $160. I think that all speaks for itself.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon, Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. The website, GaryK.com. If you miss any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind at the time you want. We have a pause and rewind function that works both online and by updating the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.